Hash Hash and Circle Up.
Welcome to On, the Hash House Harrier podcast for interviews, history, and stories. I'm your host, Ra.
Today on the podcast, we're in Chicago, major U.S. city, with a major U.S. hashing figure, someone who's been hashing an extremely long time and has met people where he's traveled and the many people who have come through Chicago. Today on the podcast, please welcome Horny. Welcome.
Howdy.
All right, Horny, tell everybody where you started. When, where, and how did you first start hashing?
Started in Chicago. It was in 1985, June 9th. Let's see, about June 12th. I saw an article in the paper about a story about hashing. They mentioned one girl at this bank, and I happened to have a date with another girl at that same bank that day for lunch. Yeah, would you believe that? After lunch, I said, okay, you're going back to the bank and you're going to introduce me to this other girl. A week later, I showed up at a hash. I'm standing on the corner, about 50 people standing there. And I finally walked up to a couple of people and says, hey, how do you do this thing? They says, well, we don't know. We're new too.
Wow.
Chicago back in those days was a very cliquish group, and they all come and talk to their friends and ignore the new people. I guess a lot of hashers can be that way because you're there to meet your friends.
Yeah.
Sometimes the new people get ignored. And ever since then, I've always made it my mission to try and meet the new people when I get there and introduce them and tell them about hashing.
Yeah.
It happened to be a rugby farewell party that day. One of the rugby players that started the hash, this one guy was going back to New Zealand. So it turned out that's why it was a big party. And they go to this bar, and eventually they did an alouette on some girl, this guy named Chicken George, one of the original founding group. And he did a beautiful alouette. And I said, boy, this is great. I love this. And they said, well, forget that, because Chicago don't sing. And the Chicago hash didn't sing.
Yeah.
It was started by rugby players, but a year or so before that, there was another story apparently or something, and a bunch of just plain what we called yuppies came to the hash and liked to run, but that was the end of singing and stuff like that, and they kind of took over the hash.
Wow.
So, and I didn't know any different, okay, because, you know, that's my first introduction. They don't sing? Okay, they don't sing. A couple months later, I happened to be going to Florida to a beer convention a week after Labor Day. And I found out that there's this Interam in Atlanta. Boy, wanted that second day, I go up to this party room and I hear, you know, I'm drinking beer in one room and I hear singing in the other room. And I walked in there because back in the military, I used to sing dirty songs.
Yeah.
So, you know, it goes back to the early 60s for me. There was Ian Cumming. That was my introduction to Ian Cumming.
Wow.
And you know, everybody knows who Ian Cumming is. Just love that man, you know, and I sang with them a few songs that I knew that they knew, you know, and gave my versions of things. And we had a great time. When I came back to Chicago, again, no singing. A couple months later, this guy that had moved here from Hawaii started trying to introduce a circle and singing. And it took years to get these people to get off their ass and come join us in our own circle. But now we're a great singing group.
Who was that that came from Hawaii?
Oh, you wouldn't know him. He's 10 years older than me. His name was Downwind. He's now retired in Jacksonville. I think he's still alive.
You've been hashing there. It's coming 36 years or so. How did you get your hash name?
That guy Downwind. He started writing hash trashes because they had hash trashes in Hawaii. So he started in Chicago, and he just threw names out for people, making them up on his own. And he called me Beer Can.
Huh.
So I went up to him the next time I saw him and says, can you tell me some different name besides Beer Can? The idea of Beer Can is that I'm a beer collector, beer can collector, beer bottle collector. I've got thousands and thousands of cans, you know, that I've been collecting all my life.
Mm-hmm.
I've been doing this for over 50 years. I suggested something different. I gave him about four or five different options that I suggested, and said anything else. If you call me Beer Can, everyone's going to want to know why I'm Beer Can. I'm going to end up talking about beer cans instead of hashing.
Yeah.
I'm going to talk about hashing. When I came back from Interam, there was one girl at the Interam. She was the L.A. harlot. She had this huge bull's horn, longhorn steer. And I looked at that and I says, that's me. So I brought home, I found a horn on my way home in a gas stop, believe it or not. So I started blowing the horn on trail. Just said horn-E because my real name is E and I'm blowing the horn. It just seemed to come together, kind of had the innuendo without it actually being true.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it's horny. Maybe 15 years later, they found out that I had suggested my own name. So they changed my name just arbitrarily to Beelzebub. That lasted about 3 or 4 weeks. And this guy named Mudsucker came up in a circle and it says, look, I nominate we rename Horny Horny because he's been horny since any one of us ever met him. And it was acclamation, Horny.
So you were renamed Horny. Horny. Yeah. All right. What happened to the original Horny Horn?
Oh, I've gone through multiple horns. The horns that I blew out of, I had two of them stolen at Inner Hashes.
Oh.
People back in the 80s and early 90s were in this game of stealing people's personal property. Yeah. And sometimes you get it back with a tag on it or something, and other times you wouldn't. You know, they were making a joke out of stealing people's personal property.
Yeah.
And so I lost a couple of those. I also had a horn, a bull's horn that I drank out of all these years. I know I lost one on a beach in Cyprus where I was changing clothes with Icebox from Australia.
Uh-huh.
We were down to the point of changing panties and underwear. But anyway, I set my horn down while I was doing this, and within a blink of an eye, the horn was gone. I've gone through several horns. Right now, I don't use the horns at all. About a year ago, my last blowing horn, it was just falling apart so bad that it just really cracked, and I couldn't use it anymore, and I didn't go get another one because I'm running so slow. You're blowing a horn from way behind, a block behind people. You should be blowing the horn when you're leading people to teach, you know, show them where the trail is.
Yeah.
I quit that. I wasn't worried about it anymore. And the one I drank out of, well, that was falling apart also. A year ago, February, my doctors said, hey, your liver is really at the edge of tipping. You don't quit, you're going to end up with cirrhosis.
Mm.
I quit drinking. You know, that night, I had one more beer and I quit drinking.
Wow.
Just cold turkey.
Yeah.
And in the year and a half, I've had less than 10 beers.
Oh.
I'm not drinking my soft drink in a horn. It's kind of a sacrilege, you know?
Yeah. Started Interam pretty soon after hashing by finding Atlanta. And you continued going to Interams since then?
I did a rough count on the Interams and Interhashes I've done.
Mm-hmm.
I've done 15 Interhashes, 10 Interams, and I did the 50th, 60th, and 80th anniversaries.
Of Mother Hash.
Yeah, Mother Hash, right.
Yeah.
So I've done a lot of traveling around the world. I've got 25 countries, I think. I got to update that on the Half Mind.
Let's talk about Ian. Where did you see Ian again after Atlanta?
Oh, I saw him at many places. I can't recall all the places, but like camp out runs, and we'd end up sitting naked in a hot tub with a couple of Harriets and singing songs late into the night, things like that.
Did he come to Chicago?
Yeah, he came to Chicago one time. He called me up and says, hey, I'm coming in. I says, well, I can inflate a mattress I can put on the floor for you. And he slept on my living room floor for 3 days. It was a January or February thing. He was going to leave Sunday night, and he called me from the airport and says, New York is snowed in. I can't even get to my car, so can I spend one more night? And I said, yeah, come on back.
Oh, neat.
But we had a great time. We went down to Indiana for one hash in Lafayette, Indiana. Used mm-hmm. to be the Hoosier Hash. They just restarted hashing in Lafayette, by the way.
Mm.
We did that on Friday night. No, we did that on Saturday. And on a Sunday, I set up a hash. I laid the trail for a hash that actually came from a bar to my place and then back to the bar. When we weren't hashing or talking to other people from 6 o'clock, roughly 6 o'clock Friday night until about noon Monday,
mm-hmm.
him and I traded stories back and forth, never stopped talking and never repeated the same story. That's all we did is talk hashing. And we had so many stories between us that it was just an amazing weekend with the icon of hashing in America anyway.
Yeah.
He was fantastic. I also saw him, this was great, when we went from London to Cardiff for the Cardiff Interhash.
Uh-huh.
I got in a singing car. There was one car that was going to be for singing. I ended up sitting with him, and I was next to him, and Hazakashi came by, and Fuckstick came by. And we just sang and sang all the way to Cardiff. Just had a ball singing. He just knew the songs.
Yeah.
For myself, you know.
Was he a runner back in that time when he came to Chicago still?
Yeah, he was running. Yeah, sure. It was quite a ways back. Yeah, I know eventually his legs got to him.
Yeah, he used to come to visit Toronto during our anniversary weekend. His sister lived outside of Toronto, so he would come with his old 1959 scrapbook of musical theater that she could remember those days. So he would come and visit her in the home and review that stuff with him.
I'll tell you another story about him. Back in the 60s, 70s, yeah, when I was out of the military, I found these various risque albums of singing, okay? One of them was Oscar Brand, and they had various risque songs. Nothing, you know, they're really mild compared to what we do, some of the stuff we do now, for sure.
Yeah.
I recorded all those on tapes, 8-track tapes.
Yeah.
And gave the stack of them to him, just so, you know, passing something on to him. Huh. And he told me one time, Rosé got pissed off at him because they were driving somewhere and he kept playing those songs and she didn't want to hear them.
That's his driving music. That's good.
Yeah.
It's great to get these stories. You just keep telling them. But I wanted to ask you about Chicago Hash over these years. You saw it change quickly early on in the 80s. How has it changed every decade or so? How's Chicago managed?
As far as I'm concerned, we've become a pretty good singing area. We got really good for a while. We had a couple of great RAs that would really get some singing going. Calvin Klein was one. There was two women that were really great. I'm talking various hashes within Chicago. Mm-hmm. Little Trojan Annie was great. She does the thing for the, you know, 7 days of hashing. She does a thing. You wouldn't believe what she does with that. She's ends up humping on the floor and everything else when she's dying. You know, she's a fantastic thing. The Dark Cunt was another one. She was mainly for the Thursday hash. They did excellent circles. The Dark Gun actually used to slip on this, like a panty girdle with a merkin as glued onto it. So she'd walk around with this merkin in the middle of the circle. We got really good in our songs. Our circles in bars would go, some, you know, easily an hour or more sometimes. We couldn't do enough of the long songs. There's people that sing them. But in the last year or so, it's gone downhill a lot. Of course, obviously, this pandemic hurt us a lot.
Yeah.
All winter, we had a small group that just kept hashing. They shut down the two weekly hashes, the Thursday hash and Chicago hash. They just said, we're shutting down for the pandemic. Wow. And we just said, we're not. One guy just formed a group and he put a name on it and says, Chicagoans love hashing, something like that. We just took up on Chicago's day. If we found somebody wanted to lay a hash on Sunday, we laid a hash and we ran. Wow. And it was the same group of maybe 20 people. You'd find 10 or 12 of that group every event. And we have like 8 hashes in Chicago. And it's the same group of people. You know, you get about 10, 12 of them for everything you set. And we stood out in the cold and we just, you know, in a big circle, sat in lounge chairs in parks, mm-hmm, in a big circle for an hour, you know, 10 degrees out. And we just kept singing and, you know, we kept hashing going all winter. They're still coming out. A lot of the hashers that were there like 2 years ago, they're not coming out much. There's a few things that have changed that I don't like. Someone decreed that we're not allowed to sing Swing Low anymore. And I said, the hell with that. I'm in charge of the Bushman hash. I said, we're singing Swing Low at the Bushman hash. That's another thing I can get into.
Did you found any of these hashes? Did you start any of them?
I started a lot of hashes. The first one I started was in our early days. 4 girls from Chicago who had hashed elsewhere came up to me and asked me if I would start a hash called the Windy City Hash for Friday nights. And we want to teach these people how to sing and have a circle. And we got about 5 or 6 of men and found out that these girls were out of town most of the time. And they wanted me to do all the herring. So I said, the hell with this. So I just kind of folded it. I should put that on the genealogy report. I don't know if it's on there or not. I've got records on it somewhere. Mm-hmm. After that, I co-founded the Chicago Full Moon Hash. There was a dispute one time and they were going to take away night hashing in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And I said, bullshit, I'll start another moon hash. And I was outside the first crack of the moon hash. So there's one more night a month that we could hash at night. So I started the first crack of the moon, which is supposed to be the first light after a new moon.
Right.
I give a 3-day window to both those hashes. so that they can be moved around a little bit. So they don't conflict with other hashes. I never wanted a conflict.
Right.
I'd rather go to two hashes than both of us fighting over, you know, two different groups fighting for the same group of people. Mm-hmm. Because they floated from day to day, different days of the week, I put that 3-day window in, and that works great. I was GM of both of those for 20 years or more, well over 20 years, and I end up laying half the trails because he couldn't find people. We were finding conflicts with Chicago all the time and stuff, and they would just decide to move our date without telling us anything, and they had bigger numbers, and so it was hard keeping a group going. I got tired of being RA and GM and haberdash and everything, so I started something that's nice for a small group, and sometimes we even do it with 15 people or more. I would give the first down to somebody, and whoever you give that down to then takes over the circle and gives the next one. Yeah. And it goes back and forth and around the circle, and there's no tag backs. We have a great fun with that because you have to think of your own violation and have songs ready if you can for when you get called.
Right. And everybody participates, even visitors.
Everybody participates. The last moon hash we had a week ago, well, we were in the park and we had chairs for everyone to just hang around in the park and drink beer afterward. We had one chair too few. So we played a game, musical chairs. If you got up, you do your down, then while you're making your accusation, whoever you accuse, they'd get up to get their down, and you could grab their chair. So it was musical chairs, and that was a lot of fun because it mixed up the circle.
Yeah,
because you're always sitting next to somebody different, you know?
Yeah.
And a lot of little fun things we do. Big Dog Hash in Chicago, it's a monthly, the second Saturday of the month. We claim no mismanagement, so we write everybody's name down on a piece of paper, and you draw a name out, and that's the RA for as long as you want, which is usually one or two accusations, three or four if you want. And then you draw another name out of the hat, and that person takes over. So that's how we do that place. That's, again, everyone participates at least for one down.
What's interesting, RA places and RA at big events where people don't all know each other, and that kind of thing gets people's confidence up. And
And it gets more participation. Some people are afraid to say anything. They don't know the songs. We'll help them with a song. But make your accusation, because sometimes they'll remember something from trail that becomes a worthwhile accusation. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of fun with that. The Bushman hash that I run, I start the circle, and then it goes just to my left. And we just go keep on around and around the circle until we're tired of it. And so, you know, when your turn is coming up, have something ready. We have a lot of different options in Chicago. We try and keep things as best as I can, a little different so that each one has their own personality rather than all be clones of Chicago or something like that.
Yeah. You've been hashing a long time, 36 years. So you don't care what anybody thinks. You've got opinions that are, tell me something about hashing that has ever bothered you. Have you seen that you would have preferred, apart from people stealing stuff, anything else about hashing ever head off in the wrong direction?
That stealing thing, I think that died out after a few years. I do remember one time, interesting story on that. One of the victims was Dick Tracy from Erie.
Yeah.
He had a Dick Tracy mug. I don't know if you've ever seen it, because I know he's been up in Toronto and stuff.
Yeah, I've hashed a lot in Erie.
Yeah. But it is a Dick Tracy figure, you know, with the yellow hat, just the Dick Tracy comic character.
Yeah.
He got named in Chicago. We named him.
Ah, well, when people don't know him, he looks like Dick Tracy. He looks like a cartoon character.
Actually, I got two funny stories on that. This is good. I told him, play your role with your name and you'll become more well-known. People always remember you. That's what I always try to do with the horny, you know, drinking out of a horn and stuff. Mm-hmm. So he got a yellow trench coat like the Dick Tracy comic book character.
Yeah.
And he would wear that. He finally found that Dick Tracy mug. Well, he'd set it down at a hash and someone was always stealing it. Mm-hmm. So one day at an Erie hash camp out, they gave him back his mug. And I think we restole that mug 3 or 4 times that day. He sat down to go dance with somebody and come back, and we're passing it under the table, and you get it back an hour later and you have to chug out of it. Yeah. And then 5 minutes later, we steal it again. Doing that way was fun because he eventually got it back.
Yeah.
You know, the other story is we had a Halloween run, and the guy's doing this in costume, and the guy has this Halloween run in a forest preserve that ended up at an Indian burial ground.
Oh, I wasn't that one. There's
this big rock in Chicago that apparently a huge boulder, you know, like 5 foot high and 5 foot around. Mm. And apparently Indians are buried under it or around it. And we ended up there 50 yards from the road. This idiot that puts the thing together keeps flashing his flashlights. You can't give people flashlights sometimes without them playing with it, you know?
Yeah.
And we're drinking in the woods after dark, and that's not allowed. Well, all of a sudden, you see a car pull up, and another one, and another one. We had 8 SWAT cars from 9 different jurisdictions out there.
Nice.
And they know we're here. We turned out the flashlights, but they've already seen the flashlights, you know? So they know we're there. So we send Dick Tracy out. Because he was just dressed in the trench coat and a yellow hat. So he looked the most reasonable to send out there because, like 2 girls were dressed as devils and we're at an Indian burial ground, you know. Isn't that cool? So we send him out. And as he walks out, they tell him to put your hands behind your head.
Oh, no.
And here they had Dick Tracy with his hands behind his head. I'm, about to be arrested. Cops arresting Dick Tracy. I mean, that alone is funny. We told him what we were doing. He says, well, we're just out here for a run. So the cop says, explain run. He says, well, that's when you put 1 foot in front of the other a little faster than a walk. That alone should have got us busted. They finally just told us, get the hell out of there. And I said, well, can we go get our stuff in the woods? And yeah, we went in and we got a couple of coolers full of beer and walked down the highway and found a different spot to jump into the woods and finish our beer with no flashlights.
Yeah, wow.
There's 1,000 stories out there. I don't like this political correct crap of stopping the singing of Swing Low because it's a Negro spiritual. It's about runaway slaves hoping. I mean, I've read about it, okay? It's about runaway slaves. The River Jordan was actually the Ohio River, yearning to get to the other side, heaven, freedom, and all that, which is all fine. But in 36 years, I've never heard anyone say anything or sing any songs or anything against Black people. And so after 36 years, if we haven't done anything bad, why the hell should we quit that song?
Mm-hmm.
When I went to Bali Interhash, the first one in 88, were you hashing back then?
I was hashing, but I didn't get to Bali. I was stuck in the Middle East.
Where the party finished at the end of the night was out like a little peninsula jutting out into the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just all flat ground, grass, deep grass. They built a stage up there and they had a hash band up there and big bright lights on the stage and everyone's dancing and partying and stuff. And the last night, they finally reached the end of the night. All the last skits are done and the hash band started playing Swing Low. And they turned out the lights on the stage. And so here we are in the dark. You're talking about 2,000 people, plus or minus, standing out there in this field and standing out in the middle of the ocean, starlit sky. It's just beautiful. And they kept singing that song, and everyone is singing it. And we went over it and over it and over it. They must have sang it for 10 to 15 minutes. And the whole crowd is singing for 10 to 15 minutes. And you're looking around in the dark, and this is my second interhash. I met hundreds of people that weekend, and many of them you may never see again.
Mm-hmm.
You're saying farewell. A lot of your friends that you met now for a couple of years, I'm relatively new, but I'm not going to maybe see them for 2 more years.
Mm-hmm.
It almost became like a sacred song.
It's a reverential moment.
I mean, it is. It's our farewell. Even on a local weekly run, you're not going to see anybody till next Tuesday or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just kind of a farewell, and it's a nice song. I think they tended to start garbaging up a little bit. They, doing Scooby-Doo versions and that kind of crap. Mm-hmm. And I never liked that. I never participated in those. I just sang the basic song because to me it meant something. The memories of Bali, which was just absolutely fantastic in all of our minds. And to be saying farewell to that song for like 15 minutes straight, just over and over and over. To me, it means something. Mm-hmm. And I will not quit singing that song.
I hope I don't get torched too bad. I put it at the end of every podcast. There's a version that was sung.
Yeah, I know. I heard that.
Sung by the Mother Hash, and that'll be at the end of every podcast. Because to me, that is a reverential communal effort of the hashers. It's sung by people of all colors, shades, ages, and everything.
Yeah. There's a few little things I don't like about it. Like one of the things in one of the verses, whenever I do, and everyone yells, shit. I don't like that. Keep it straight. Keep the song straight. Our hand motions are as dirty as it needs to be. It makes a beautiful song, and nobody should complain about it. I'm going to continue fighting it quietly, slowly. I often sign a lot of my things with the stories I write with Swing Low, on Horny. And that's what I'm doing, reminding them of Swing Low all the time.
It's just a little regional problem. We don't hear too much complaining in Asia. And
no,
90% of the world is not against it. Yeah.
I'm very politically oriented these days. I sit around reading things and stuff all day long about political things of all natures. To me, this politically incorrect thing, that's what hashing is. We're politically incorrect.
Yeah.
What the hell do they think we're doing out there singing these songs?
What about songs you've created or written?
The first one I remember actually writing was just Way Down in Barcelona.
Oh.
I was singing that at the Dirt Road Hash. What was it, Padilla? No, it wasn't Padilla. It was in Padilla when I did the Dirt Road. And that's where I heard this guy singing this song. And I just liked it. As I was sitting on the plane, I wrote three more verses to it. Like a month after I got back, 2 months after I got back, I was in Interham or something. Someone had a Dallas-Fort Worth songbook. And I looked through the songbook. And I found Barcelona, and they already had my three verses added to the three verses that were there.
Oh, my gosh. Well, hey, can you do
within
one now?
A couple months.
Do you have a verse in your head now from that song?
No. Let's see. Way down in Barcelona where the wankers wank the crank, a wanker took a yank off another wanker's crank. Said the wanker to the yanker, we're here to wank our crank and not to take a yank off of someone else's crank.
Nice.
Way down in Barcelona where the beggars beg for food. A beggar chucked a luger in another beggar's gruel, said the beggar to the beggar, we're here to beg for food and not to chuck a luger in another beggar's gruel.
Those verses are widespread now. We've seen them. Yeah. I've heard them many places. Yeah.
Back in the day, I went to Texas Interhash one time, and it was the year that Halley's Comet went over.
Oh,
yeah, that was 90. That week, and we was in a nudist camp. I was going to try something, and I got it done once. I talked some girl into shaving her hoo-ha. Right there in the middle of a field, and about 20 people standing around behind me watching. So I did that a couple of times at Camp Eaton also. So I made up a limerick for it. It was with a guy named Dave who gave ladies legs. No, there was with a dirty old knave who gave ladies legs an incredible shave. And betwixt and between, he'd slick them all clean and never, well, hardly ever misbehave.
That's great.
That's my limerick.
Yeah.
We do have one here in Chicago I didn't create. They sing virtually every hash for me because I created the Bushman hash. Bushman is the greatest hash. Bushman is the greatest hash. We pay $5 hash cash to find with a beer stash. Bushman hash is the greatest fucking hash. Running through the shiggy, that's where it's at. Break it down, down, down. At the Bushman hash, at the Bushman hash. A guy named Son of Spam wrote that. I mean, even some of the regular songs, they'll do some kind of long song, and all of a sudden they'll come up, they'll start singing the Bushman hash song out of it.
Just in the middle of it.
It was really irritating a few of the RAs for a while. Now everyone they just all love the song. And so they're singing the Bushman hash song to me all the time. I created many hashes. I created the Windy City, the Two Moon hashes. I was co-founder of the Thursday hash. I founded the Bushman hash. I co-founded Holiday Hash, which it kind of died. But we would just run on holiday weekends or something, like Valentine's Day, Columbus Day, whatever. An excuse to hash, we'd just make up a hash if nobody was hashing that day.
Mm-hmm.
That died when the other girl that was involved with it, International Virgin, she moved on. I got too many other things to do that on my own all the time. And then we did a Naked City hash, which became the Bear Hair and Hounds Hash House Harriers and Harriettes once a year in a nudist camp. That lasted about 20 years. And I just finally got pissed off. The girls were bitching at me. You're looking at her tits. She's walking around fucking naked. Of course I'm looking at her tits. You know, I mean, they got a little stupid about things. And I finally says, I do all the goddamn work here. While you guys are all playing in the pool all weekend, I'm doing all the cooking and cleaning up and everything. Yeah, I'm tired of doing all the goddamn work. I'm done with it. And that was it. It wasn't worth it to do everything yourself. And 15, 20 people just partied all weekend, running around naked. One girl got married out of it with one of the locals. And one guy got cold cocked one day because he talked to somebody, some local woman, guy's wife briefly. It was stupid and crazy things. And they said, I don't need this bullshit anymore.
Yeah, I've had its couple decade run. You've set a lot of trails. As a founder of a hash, sometimes that's required to set more lot of hairs, trails to get going. What's your approach to setting trails in general?
one of the most prominent goals is to always screw the front runners. I mean, that's the checks and splits or back checks and all that shit. You want to screw the front runners. And so they got to come back 100 feet or 100 yards or two blocks. So what? They came to do run 7 miles. They got the 3 or 4 milers coming along, and it keeps everyone together. So you want to screw them. And when I used to sweep trails a lot, that's when I could run better. I would always love to stand at a check and watch them. And I'd have 4 or 5 false trails out there. And say, they got one. They got 2. They got 3. They got 4. I got them on all 4. And then they finally find the correct trail. That was a joy to me, nailing the front runners. Mm-hmm. Most of the trails I run, I try and do little tricky things. They call me a rat bastard for some of the tricks I pull on them. I run a lot of woods runs, especially with the Bushman hash. The Bushman hash is all woods. Mm-hmm. I'm the hare every month. Yeah, that's another story.
That's for 20 years?
So what are we coming up? We're about 196 runs now, once a month. It's like 196, and I've laid like 190 of them. It became a joke in the beginning. It started on my 20th anniversary when I started the Bushman Hash. I remember we had about 20 people, and I formed a big circle, and we're all sitting in the circle, and I'm sitting on a block of ice. And I says, okay, this is my 20th anniversary. It's like a roast. You guys say anything you want about me, you take your turns around the circle. And I had to drink beer and sit there on the ice the whole time. One guy said, no matter what we say about you, I got to say you're the first person when we showed up that came over and talked to us.
Nice.
And so I always felt good about that. But I laid that trail with a co-hare. Because there's so many hashes in Chicago, I wasn't going to ask anybody else to hare until we had enough of a base of our own. Mm-hmm. And then for the next 5 or 7 years, there's something we're dealing with, 2, 3 people showing up to hash. And it was almost always the same 2 guys. You know, Lifa.
Yeah,
he was one of them. He's done like 150 Bushman hashes, I think. Wow. It was just me, him, and a guy named Orgy many times. It's just the 3 of us. So we'd stand in the woods for an hour afterwards, just drinking beer and having a great time amongst ourselves. And they got great trails. Mm-hmm. My trail in the woods is always with the idea that I wasn't trying to run you through water. If water happens, it happens. I'm not trying to get you wet. I'm trying to get you into the woods to run in the woods. Just run as much as you can. So a lot of that is on path, and a lot of it is over logs and into. Sometimes you get in the briars and stuff you find yourself in, you can't get out. But each time you go in the woods, it looks different. They're all a little different in that regards. And I try and give everyone a good run, plus try and keep the front runners from running away with the trail. Mm-hmm. And a variety in the running that you're doing while you're running. So that's my goal on that. The Bushman Hash, like I said, we always finish in the woods. You run up to a bee. There's no bee near or anything. All of a sudden, there's a bee and there's no more marks. Somewhere within 50 feet, 75 feet, there's beer hidden under a pile of leaves, and a hollow of a tree, under a log, whatever. You got to find it, and you don't find it, you don't break. They love it. And in the winter, I bury it in the snow and stuff like that. We stand out in the snow for a half hour, 45 minutes. Still gets too damn cold. And then we normally would run to a bar and have a warm-up beer or two. Well, just all woods all the time. We may have to cross a road, but we never run down a road. So that's our game. And that's hard in Chicago.
You live in a place with 4 seasons, so you get all the weather all year round. You've hashed in Asia in the jungle. Have you hashed in desert or any other extreme kind of terrain that you liked or found different?
Well, the jungles of Asia, of course. And like Costa Rica, we ran in the woods jungle there.
Have you hashed in Colorado at the altitude?
No, I missed Colorado. I missed a bunch of inter-ams because of lack of funds. And the first one was Pittsburgh. They started bragging about how they're going to give us a boat ride down the middle of a river. And I said, I've been on boat rides. I don't want to go on a boat ride, spend all this money, just go sit on a boat going down the river. And so I didn't go. Then when you miss one, you miss another and another. I'll tell you another funny one. I wanted to go to a beer convention in Denver 1 year. I was going to go to the beer convention. My plans were to go there for a couple of days and then leave on Friday and fly down to Puerto Vallarta.
Oh, wow.
And then afterwards, fly from Puerto Vallarta back up to Denver, get my rental car out of a garage and drive back to Chicago with all my beer paraphernalia. I couldn't get a flight from Denver to Puerto Vallarta. Huh. They fly direct from Denver to Puerto Vallarta, but they wouldn't put me on a plane to Puerto Vallarta that didn't go through Chicago. And if I checked from Chicago wanting to fly to Puerto Vallarta, I had to fly through Denver.
Oh, my God.
I mean, it was that stupid. And I told United Airlines to go to hell. Okay. And so I missed Puerto Vallarta, and I heard it was fantastic.
But that was a good event, sure. We almost had a hurricane. They closed the port with a hurricane warning, but it turned away. But it was a good event. We didn't get hit, but we did not get hit by the hurricane.
I stood on a porch one time in our western suburb when we were running a hash and started raining real hard. The tornado sirens went off. There was some guy standing on his porch with the light on waiting for his kids to come home. He invited us up onto his porch out of the rain, and we stood there for a half hour with the sirens going off waiting for a tornado to come through.
Wow.
And I have run on a hash one time where power lines were down and a block away was seeing sparks all over the place. And I said, we'll change the course. We're going a different way.
What's the farthest you've driven to go to a hash weekend or event?
I drove down to Orlando.
Wow, okay. Because you're in the middle of the country, you could pick one corner and you're about there.
I think I flew to Arizona. I missed Portland. I flew to Calgary. I drove to the States ones, like the East Coast, like Philadelphia. Mm. I drove to a lot of them. Yeah, I just rent a car and you could get a week's rental and take off.
You met most of the very active hashers over the last 36 years. Did you meet Flying Booger?
Oh, yeah. I've been interviewed by Flying Booger on his blog or whatever. Right. He had a list of 20 questions to answer or whatever. And I can tell you a funny story about that.
Okay.
One of the questions was, what's your one of the most memorable hashes? And it was a run in Pittsburgh. And one of the camp out runs, we're finally coming down to a river. And there was a steep little slope, just a little slope, you know, like 10, 15 feet high, but it was steep. Mm-hmm. And sliding down it, I'm running next to Catwoman, and she pulls out her shoulder.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. We get down to the water's edge. We don't know that there's water right ahead of us. And we get to the water's edge. And when they laid the trail, the water was down. It had rained during the previous week, and the water was not going to be like knee deep or thigh deep of a wide, you know, fast moving river. It was now going to be swimming at least maybe 100 feet. She couldn't swim with her shoulder pulled out. She kind of popped it in place, but now everything's sore. I found dead Kennedys and got him to help me. And we both, you know, swam on either side of her and swam across the river with her. And halfway across the river, I asked her how she's doing. She said, I'm getting awful tired. So I reached down and grabbed her shorts and gave her the world's biggest wedgie. And I just kept pulling.
And she's a singer, so you can't let any of the singers get hurt. She's a big singer.
She got interviewed by Flying Booger and told the same damn story. Her most memorable event.
I will get her on here and see how the details match up. So that's another singer. You mentioned Hazekashi and Fuckstick. Music, of course.
Yeah, music. I've listened to four of your interviews now. One of them was Eiffel Tower.
Mm-hmm.
And he just happened to pop through Chicago a week ago. And his wife, Second Coming, showed me how to load Zoom onto my car. That's
right.
Why we're talking. She helped me load it on.
That's great.
Went and listened to his story then, his interview. She Muscle Bitch, and who else did I listen to? I can't even remember now.
Ian Cumming started in Canada. He founded the Singapore Hash, basically, in New York. We kind of think of him as American hasher after Asia. What other international hashers do you know or have you met up with that you find memorable?
Yeah, I know Higgins well. At that Beer Odyssey hash in Brussels, I had asked him the previous year if he can find some cheap little motels or not motel type things. You know, I can't afford these $100 rooms.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, oh, I'll get you something better. You can stay at my place because I'm going to be downtown. I have to be down running things.
Mm-hmm.
So when it came time to come down, he says, hey, we're going to do you even better. We're going to put you up for free in a hash hotel.
Wow.
So I got a free room for 5 days.
Nice.
That was nice. And it was one of the closest hotels to the venue. So that was real nice of him. Well, I know Dr. PP and, of course, Rosé and Sex Toy. I got lost on a mountain with Sex Toy. She won't tell you about that.
Wait, say that again?
On a mountain with Sex Toy. I guess it was New Zealand. That's who else I listened to. You talked to Deep Throat in New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's where it was, with a helicopter in the cooler full of beer.
At Rotorua Interhash. Mount Manganui. Yeah.
I went up the wrong way somehow. And so when they're all kind of after we're done with the beer, everyone's going down. So I already went that way. And one thing leads to another. Me and Sex Toy go down the mountain in a different way. Thinking they're going to be down there for a while. Well, by the time we get down, we find we're on the opposite side of the mountain.
Oh, yeah.
So we circle the mountain. And just as we come around the mountain, we see the last bus pulling away.
Yeah.
There we are. A half hour later, a bus came back for us.
Wow.
We both had to sit on ice in the circle that night. She was pissed at me for that. My fault. Of course, it was my fault. I have sat on an ice hockey rink in Calgary, buried into bags of ice that were just emptied on me.
After the hash trail, they went to an ice hockey rink?
Yeah, one hash trail, I think like a Friday night before the Calgary interim, they ended up in an ice hockey rink. And they have this thick cardboard panels over the ice.
Mm-hmm.
And they're about 2 inches thick of like a foaming kind of cardboard. And they were about 3 foot by 6 foot.
Mm-hmm.
And I had my horn with me. Well, my horn was just enough to wedge down between a couple of pieces of cardboard and pull the damn cardboard up. Once you got one up, we got about a dozen up. I think Rosé was sitting by me, come to think of it. But we had about 20 people sitting on the ice hockey ring before security found us.
Yeah. How about white powder ones with the anthrax scares and white powder?
Yeah, I got arrested for that once. I laid a trail of Bushman hash. Some woman come, I'm sure, just came by and said, "Oh, I don't know what that is. I must call the police," you know. And she calls the police, and they're spending a half hour or so more trying to find me because I'm laying trail through the woods. Finally, this trooper finds me, and the tree police, we call them, and he called his sergeant. The sergeant comes over, and we had to go through this big field to where his sergeant was sitting in his car, and he's all pissed off. And I think it was pissed off because it was the first day of a March Madness basketball tournament in, in the States. And I think he was probably wanting to sit in the office and watch basketball. And he was pissed off that he had to go out and do a job. He was insistent, when I explained everything, he was insistent that I got 2 tickets. And the damn thing was, where we're standing there about 50 yards away, while I'd been laying trail, I found a huge, monstrous TV, one of the old TVs that were, you know, big widescreen, but a foot and a half thick, sitting in the woods. And he goes, "That's litter. My little bit of flour is not litter. It's biodegradable and benign." But no, I got a ticket for that and a ticket for disturbing the peace.
Oh.
And then where the cop's writing the tickets and the sergeant leaves, and I says, "You know, are my friends going to be able to still run?" He says, "Yeah, you can run." My trail was almost complete at that point, 90% complete.
Yeah.
So he ends up putting me in the car and drives me over to where they're meeting to start. And they're all standing there drinking illegally right next to the road. You got to be like 50 feet away from the road to drink in our forest reserves.
Yeah.
And they're standing right next to the road drinking, and all of a sudden the squad car comes up, and they're quick hiding their beers, you know, behind tires and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And he stops right in front of them, and I get out of the car.
That's great.
So I got them started on trail, and then this asshole, when he's done, he goes and checks to make sure everyone had the right vehicle stickers on their car.
Oh my God.
Just being jerks about it.
Yeah.
And when I went to court on it, I had to go to court, and it was way out in the forest reserve. I had to take 2 trains to get out there and walk about a mile on a road in a snowy day that did not been completely shoveled and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Just to get there, the county's attorney comes up and says, "What's this all about?" And I'm thinking, "You don't even know what it's about." So I give him a rough idea what it's about, and he says, "Well, look, if you plead guilty on one, I'll let you off on the other one, and it'll cost you just $100.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't plead guilty, I'm going to go after both of them. It'll be $500 fine on each and $100 court cost on each." I looked at $100 and I looked at $1,200 and I pleaded guilty. I don't even know what I pleaded guilty to, whether it was disturbing the peace or littering.
Mm-hmm.
I pleaded guilty and got the hell out of there. So it cost me $100.
Yeah.
That was a Bushman hash. We had a big anthrax scare in Chicago years ago, about 20 years ago, I guess. This guy named It's Too Soft laid a trail just before Christmas, and he was going to call it the Santa Hat Run. He didn't know what he was doing at the time. And it's, instead of using chalk, which we had been using in the city, or drywall, he's going to use flour, big sweeping lines of flour, because it's going to get dark. He lays his trail through the local zoo. Not a problem. We run the trail. I think only one or two people actually got to the zoo part. We got screwed up on his trail.
Mm-hmm.
This was a Sunday. On Tuesday, one of the workers in the zoo says, "What's this white mark out here? I better call 911. And damn, the fire department comes out to check on it. They test it with this new equipment. The equipment tested positive for anthrax.
Oh, my God.
Anthrax is a byproduct of zoos. There's always spores of anthrax in zoos. So it's there, okay?
Yeah.
And apparently this was a new device they had, and they didn't have it calibrated correctly. So they shut down five blocks around the zoo on Christmas Eve, and people couldn't get out of their house to go to their families, or their families couldn't come visit them for 5 fucking hours on Christmas Eve in the middle of the day.
Yeah.
They got a hold of the GM, and the GM, he was ex-military, he came out and showed them how to calibrate their equipment so it would test properly.
Wow.
They got a hold of Ed O'Hare, he was heading off to fly home in Philadelphia, and so they had to take him to the fire department in O'Hare Airport, and he had to call in and describe his trail entirely, block by block by block, so they could go over everything. And they found one guy who ran the whole trail, and they had him go over the whole trail with the fire department.
Wow.
This was right after 9/11, too.
Sure.
You know, that winter. So people were paranoid. And the reality is, after those first couple of anthrax attacks that they had in envelopes, there has never been an actual anthrax attack since. Every attack since has been false.
Yeah.
Every single one. But everyone still goes into panic mode.
Yeah. It's easy to cure. It's hard to actually get to work. So it's a silly way to, if you're going to try to hurt somebody.
When you think about anthrax, the amount of anthrax you put in your hand to throw on the ground would probably cost you, maybe $10,000, $100,000. One handful, one little handful. Anthrax is not cheap to make. You know, make tiny little amounts of it, you know, like a little bit of a salt shaker. That would cost you $1,000 to put that much down.
Yeah. It's always worse when people think that people might be throwing cocaine. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Before then, it was always cocaine. They'd follow you with a straw.
Good
I'm
session.
Wearing a t-shirt right now.
And okay, well, we have the video.
Can you see it?
Horny the Elder.
That's me. They made that up for me. Not to my knowledge. I disapproved of it when I heard about it, but they made that shirt up for me, and I figured it'd be good to wear today.
Let me ask you the classic question to wrap this up. Is the RA always right?
The RA is mostly always right. The GM is mostly always right, but not always. And that caused great conflict in Chicago because the GM tried something, and that's another story I'll tell you next time.
Okay, yeah. Stories of not necessarily politics, but conflicts, big personalities on the hashes are fun to hear. We'll get more stories from Horny in later episodes. He is one of a kind. This is the On Podcast. Hasher stories, hasher history, hasher voices. New episodes every week. Until next time, On. This is Ra.
To close the circle, here's the Hash Anthem sung by Mother Hash.
Swing low, sweet chariot, coming for to carry me home. Sweet